This program contains explicit content and subject matter which may be unsuitable for some listeners. Discretion is advised.
Smart. Sexy. Kinky. Fun.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud with your host, sex educator, author, and filmmaker, Tristan Taramino. It's sex-positive radio like you've never heard before. Tristan talks about sexuality from every angle with leading authors, experts, artists, and icons. From sex education and sexual politics to BDSM and non-monogamy, nothing is off limits. So get ready to open your mind and expand your horizons. This is Sex Out Loud. And now here's your host, Tristan Taramino.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud. I'm Tristan Taramino. Today's episode was recorded in April at International Ms. Leather 2015 in San Jose, California. It will be presented with limited commercial interruptions, courtesy of PuckerUp.com. My thanks to Sharon and Pat, producers of IMSL, who fully supported this, and many other highly charged public conversations on the topic. Now I'd like to introduce my guests.
Hey, do you know what might not be a great idea in a year just delineated by gun violence is to put not just a gun, but a gun that is then supposed to be sexy.
That's Angel. Angel is a trans, gender-defiant queer whose passion lies in educating, advocating, and coaching folks to sexual and intimate fulfillment. Angel is committed to social justice and a fully realized and intersectional sex positivity.
It's always in the back of my head with white people because we can share this understanding of leather and of kink and what this means for us to be here. And then you're always waiting for it. You know, that moment when you realize, oh, we're not in this together.
That's Brecklin, an East Coast-raised Stone Butch dyke and boy. He's been active in the leather and kink community over the past 5 years, and outside that has facilitated workshops on topics including anti-oppression, trauma, and organic farming. Here's Melina.
We're thinking a lot of people of color, a lot of trans people, a lot of folks who are marginalized or victims of gun violence, and to have that connected with a sexual event and a leather event was jarring.
Melina Williams is an award-winning, critically acclaimed writer, actress, BDSM educator, and storyteller. She is the author of The Toy Bag Guide to Taboo Play and co-author of Playing Well with Others, Your Guide to Discovering, Exploring, and Navigating the Kink, Leather, and BDSM Communities. Her perspectives on BDSM are frequently sought after by news sources such as the New York Times, the Huffington Post, Newsweek, Essence, and Ebony, and she's a frequent guest expert on Dan Savage's Savage Lovecast. The four of us got together late at night to talk about racism and the related issues that Black, Indigenous, people of color face in BDSM communities. Here is that conversation.
Yeah. We're going to talk about Black, Indigenous, and people of color, and I'm going to say by POC as a shortening version. I'm going to get that right. And the issues that you face as people of color in the BDSM / leather / kink communities, I don't want to call out International Ms. Leather or IMSL. I don't want to throw them under the bus. I don't necessarily want to rehash it all. But I think it is a moment of specificity. Like, it's a real thing that happened. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's not like racism with a capital R and then what's that? Very specific things happened. Right. So I wonder if someone will just kind of summarize for people who don't know, who didn't follow this, what happened, what the fallout was.
IMSL announced the choice of a t-shirt design for the event. And the t-shirt design, and perhaps you can put up a link if you don't want to, you know, have a giant phallic gun on your site, you can direct them to my website. I have a picture up there. But basically, imagine, if you will, a sort of not cartoony, tattoo, sort of traditional flash tattoo image of a huge revolver, a Magnum, I think. It was probably a 44 because it was a substantially hefty barrel. And out of where the barrel would be was a large, giant purple penis looking very much like a dildo with a Prince Albert piercing at the end.
Yeah, and it was definitely a dildo. And then, people are wanting to debate that, too. I'm like, I haven't seen any purple, perfectly smooth penises, but, you know.
Well, it's a cartoon penis, yeah. And so in a cartoon, sure. You might have a less veiny penis.
Creature with that penis.
But it's a dick.
Yeah, it was a dick.
Whatever dicks mean to you. It was certainly a dick.
Yeah.
And when I got involved in it, basically, I was directed to a post on the International Ms. Leather site on Facebook where people were freaking out, and it had already descended into this image is racist, and what happened was a lot of people reacted to it very strongly and from their own experience. So people of color looked at it, and as is not shocking, we're seeing a gun and we're thinking gun violence. We're thinking we're getting shot at an awful lot by the police. We're thinking a lot of people of color, a lot of trans people, a lot of folks who are marginalized are victims of gun violence. And so when I see a gun, my first thought is someone's shooting me or shooting a black man. And to have that connected with a sexual event and a leather event was jarring.
4 months after Ferguson.
Yeah. Right.
Which needs to be put in context.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right. And in this case, I was like, what were you thinking? You weren't thinking. But why would you not think? Why would you not? And I think that maybe I'm just gauging on my own social media and my own group of humans, but my feed has been, since Ferguson, nonstop that. And if your feed isn't, maybe you also need to be asking yourself why that's the case. You know, why do you not know that this is front and center for a lot of members of your community? Why do you not know and care? And I was personally really just super disappointed that nobody said, hey, do you know what might not be a great idea in a year just delineated by gun violence and murder after murder after murder after murder, is to put not just a gun, but a gun that is then supposed to be sexy.
Well, there's the breakdown, I think, for so many people. Leather and kink and big events like this are their time to get away, to throw all their cares away. You know, this is just about sex and being somebody who they're not able to be in their daily lives, which clearly aren't impacted by racism in the ways that many of us are.
Right.
And can't throw that away. There's no way to do that.
Right. Where do you throw it?
I don't know.
I would like to find the trash can. Where that goes for the weekend.
Where is the racism trash can?
Not a thing.
So I think what was disheartening for me was that the image and the choice was bad. The initial responses from people in power were not thoughtful enough for me. But the comments, which, just so you know, I never read the comments, but the comments devolved to a place that was horrifying to me. It somehow got worse when people started chiming in.
It did get worse. And the thing is that I am also a comment non-reader, except that I do work and live within this community, and I need to know who does not have my back. And I wish I could say I was more surprised, but I was just sad over and over again. And I would open this page and I would look and I would say, I wish I didn't know that this person was so unsympathetic. I wish I didn't know that this person would refuse to hear what I have to say. I wish I didn't know that someone would refer to people of color as terrorists because we made unreasonable demands to not be mocked, for example, when we express that we are pained and disturbed by something, to not be dismissed. And you're right. And it sucks to read those comments, but this is not, you know, scrolling through 4chan and seeing some anonymous person. These are people we know. These are, in some cases, people I've known for almost 20 years. And to realize that their privilege has made them so blind that they're willing to strike at us before taking a look at how much they are propped up by these structures was really disheartening. You know, and for me, I had several people, actually, and this was not the first time this has happened, say to me, well, you are kinky and you play with issues of race and racism, so how can you possibly say that this is a problem? As though the fact that I have done a scene that enacts a racist scenario means that I now have no place to discuss racism. That is like saying, for example, oh, you've done a rape fantasy. Clearly, you are pro-sexual assault.
Right.
No one would say that and think that that was okay. And that's what was said to me, and not just one person, you know, several people. So this is how blind folks are. People will throw up all kinds of defense mechanisms to make you wrong when you share that you are troubled by something.
Let's talk about blindness, because I feel like as a white person, when I engage some people on this issue, I get a really common response from well-meaning progressives who tell me things like, but I don't see color. I see people. I'm about people and human beings, and I'm colorblind. And so I can't possibly be racist. I don't see color.
It's a non-stop quote. It is a quote that gets trotted out immediately and repeatedly, and to the point where people just go, I'm done. Like, people, I think, tune out because they're so shouted down with that particular non-reality.
And what is your response to that argument? That quote, I'm going to, you know, scare quote that argument.
My first reaction is, I don't need for you to be colorblind. It's actually not helpful. What I need for you is to be actively not racist. And I need for you to see that my experience is different than yours because of my ethnicity. And I need for you to believe me when I tell you this. You're saying that you don't see color doesn't mean that the person next to you also doesn't. You can say you're colorblind, but that doesn't help me when I'm pulled over for a traffic stop and I'm in fear of my life.
Well, and also you're just fucking lying. Well, you are. It's just for sure. It's just 100% not true. And for people to continually, it's funny because I was raised by a white mother who was big on the colorblind. I mean, she was a hippie. This is what people were either, I don't know if it's kind of taught to say, and or it was the best possible answer they could come up with, when in fact it is one of the most insulting answers. To me, when someone's like, oh, no, it's okay, I don't see this thing about you that I actually kind of think is awful, but we're just going to pretend it's not there. We're just going to be cool and pretend we're all white like me. You know, there's this real, like,
you don't hear very many non-white people use that term, do you?
I mean, the only people who I have heard use that term are very centered in whiteness.
I don't hear many people of color who use that term. It's rare.
It's rare. And it is, to me, a parroting back of that dominant paradigm idea that the best way to accept people is to pretend that they are just like you, and also that just like you is the best thing to be. So that there's no other way that would be better than if I were to just say, it's kind of like when people are like, oh, you're not, I don't think of you as black.
Right.
You know, it's the same vibe. It's the same feeling.
Please think of me as black.
Because everybody else does. And you do too. That's the other thing, is it's so disingenuous. It's so disingenuous. And it's such a, that's why I find it a little insulting, because it's insulting to anyone's intelligence who's listening to that. Of course you see color, and everyone does. And our intensely shitty reactions around color as a species have shaped where we are now, and the work that we have to do dismantling that is the result of a shit ton of history. And to pretend that it's not happening just because you find it uncomfortable or awful, trust me, it is uncomfortable and awful. There's just I think that the whole, like, well, I think this sucks, so I'm going to pretend it's not happening thing is just it's
privilege.
super not effective, right? It's just like not, it doesn't work. So I'm not sure. I haven't really asked someone, and now I want to ask someone, like, what do you get out of that? Like, what do you feel like you are reinforcing for yourself when you say that?
That they're not the bad guy, that they didn't do it.
Yeah.
There was that thing that happened way back when, but I don't see that, so we're good.
It was their parents, or their parents' parents, or...
Yikes.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to take a break. We are going to continue this conversation when we return.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. You're listening to a conversation with Angel, Brecklin, and Molina Williams, recorded at International Ms. Leather 2015, which we call IMSL for short. I want to clarify something in the previous segment. When I said the initial responses from people in power were not thoughtful enough for me, I was referring to the first response of IMSL leadership. After that initial thing, in response to feedback from the community, IMSL producers pulled the original t-shirt design that we've been talking about and created an entirely new design. The producers also took action to address the issues raised by Black, Indigenous people of color at their caucus last year, including replacing the event's MC, creating both open and closed spaces for a BIPOC caucus at the event, and creating scholarships for that caucus. Now let's return to the conversation.
I want to pick up on something Angel said before the break, which was about discomfort. As a white person, that's what I feel a lot of the time. Right? I feel like I'm doing this wrong, or I don't know what I'm doing, or I don't know what I'm supposed to do, or how. So I want, and I want you to even tell me if this is a fucked up question, okay? But what I want to know is...
You're asking the right people.
I want to know, sincerely, how to be a good ally to buy POCs.
I don't think it's a fucked up question.
Well, let me... I don't think it's a fucked up question, but I do think it's the biggest question possible that is unanswerable because it's not...
It's
because
really,
I think it's
fluid.
Also, I think it's sort of a pretend thing that we've constructed so that people can think that they have finished a process when it's not a finished. It's a process. It's a verb. It's a thing that you can do. And honestly, you can't do it for a community, but you can do it for members of that community. And it requires you to actually know people. So I feel like a lot of times people want to be like, I want to be an ally, but I don't know any people of color. And I'm like, well, then
what are you doing?
You're several steps behind, right? So like, why? What is pulling you towards that desire for approval or whatever it is that's making you want that title before you actually have anyone to be in solidarity with? Like, what? Why is that the jump to?
I think it's become a buzzword because people want to feel like they can do something. You know, I remember on Facebook, social media is a great place where allyship becomes something you can actually track. And I remember during the blackface discussion when I was actually sitting over my computer 20 hours straight, refreshing and editing and pulling down comments and putting up other comments, having this discussion on FetLife and on Facebook and on Twitter and Tumblr. Windows open, just scanning all of this, and I would leave one thread for 10 minutes and some busted shit would roll up. And I'll never forget, like, going back over to a thread and seeing, like, and seeing Bear Bergman, like, Mo should not have to fucking explain this to you. Da-da-da-da. I was like, oh my God, I can take a break. That is an ally moment where you are saying, I got this. I will actually, like, speak to a white person as a white person and say, here's what the fuck is going on. Allyship also means you have to be prepared to live in that discomfort. You have to know that you will step on someone's toes and be ready to say, oh, I fucked up. What can I do to avoid that going forward? And if you're not sure what I can do, all right, cool. I will just sit and be uncomfortable and uncertain.
Yeah, because and, being clear that you can walk away from that discomfort.
Yeah.
And that that is, that right there is why. I think it's like people are like, well, why is it so hard to build that trust? It's hard to build trust with someone who can leave without repercussion. And if you decided tomorrow, like, I'm never going to talk about race again, I mean, some of your friends might call you on it, but I think by and large it wouldn't have this huge impact in the same way that it does when, even if you try to take an afternoon off as a person of color and say, like, I just need... I mean, several points in this, I was just like, all right, y'all, in private messages, mine, please, I need a fucking hour. And then, I'm not kidding, I'd get a text and be like, no, you really got luck. And but I also, you know, I didn't want to walk away from something that was so important and meaningful to me either. That's the other thing, is I don't think if there's this deep desire to walk away from it, but there's this knowing that you never can, which is a different setting than knowing that your participation is completely voluntary. And so when people are willing to stick with the discomfort, that's when I start to build trust with that person. And Bear Bergman is a fantastic example of that, because multiple times during this discussion and many others throughout the years, Bear has jumped in and said, like, you should not do all this heavy lifting. How can I help? And B, please tell me when I fuck up like this. Not if. when I hit my stupid moment, and when I do something that is completely fucked up and unacceptable, please tell me. And he said, you can call me on the phone, and you can, it'll be like a code. You can say, you're being an asshole.
That's a code.
We're very straightforward. That concept of someone who is willing to stay uncomfortable.
I think what so many white people don't get is that if we didn't give a shit, we wouldn't be talking to you. By the time we say to you, you fucked up, it's because we give a shit. People who, I cannot tell you, there's been at least a dozen people I've written the fuck off. And they will have no idea until 6 months down the line. They're like, oh, we used to talk every once in a while. Why haven't I heard from Mo? Because I wrote you off. But the people I do say, you know what, when you hit like on that person's comment, it hurt my feelings. What the hell do you think you are doing? And if your response is, well, she's being oversensitive, well, I don't understand, well, why do I have to, well, why is she monitoring my communication? Well, who does she think she is? Well, I can express myself. I do that because I care, because I want for you to understand more deeply what I'm going through. It takes effort and time to breathe out those words. And every time I express to myself that pain, because I'm one of those freaks, I relive it. And so for me to say to a person who doesn't have this experience, this is what this feels like. When I tell you that I'm hyperventilating whenever I see a police officer, when I tell you that if I see the flashers in a car when I'm driving, that I start crying, and you're like, well, oh my gosh, I'm not afraid of the police. If that's the first thing out of your goddamn mouth, I have to start, you know, filing paperwork to write you off. At that point, that's when that happens. And I wish that people understood that someone calling you out is a sign of love.
Well, go ahead. I was just going to add to that. And part of what you mentioned earlier about having friends, meaningful relationships with folks for decades, it's always a risk to be in relationship with white people. And part
yes,
of my
you're waiting for them. You're waiting
exactly,
for them to fuck
exactly.
up.
Exactly.
God damn.
Like, damn.
That is so real.
And it's, in my experience, I mean, fairly, I've been in this community not too long, about 5 years, but it's always in the back of my head with white people, because we can share this understanding of leather and of kink and what this means for us to be here. And then you're always waiting for it. You know, that moment when you realize, oh, we're not in this together.
No.
And we never were.
No.
Which really is
and
heartbreaking.
Then I feel stupid. You know, I feel like, oh, see, but I, that, my bad, because I thought you had my back.
Yeah.
You're right. I shouldn't, what was I thinking? Sorry. Sorry.
Well, judging yourself for trusting someone, which I think is just deeply fucked up, right? That you're the first person that you blame in that situation. But I understand it, though.
Yeah.
Wanting to be like, I should know better. I should always know better. And, but the truth is that, and it's funny because I've really been having this talk a lot lately about, you know, we talk a lot about how we all need each other. We need each other to make community, and this community needs us all. Does it? I don't know. And I've been kicking that idea around, and I don't know. I truly do not know. But I do know that a lot of times various points of growth in my life have happened because of my relationships with white people. And if I were to just be like, white divestment, that's it, fuck them all. it's not a simple answer either. It's not just like, well, that would just clear this all up, you know? And so I think that that's there's the conundrum. So we don't need each other, but we learn from each other and give each other things. And there is a broader experience when you don't have to constantly cut yourself off for your own safety.
Yeah. Let's talk about call-out culture, which some of you have mentioned, and is alive and well and real. I mean, there's something very specific about how this particular thing played out and other things play out. They're playing out on social media, online. How has the internet changed the landscape, changed the way we talk about these things, and is it for the better or for the worse?
No simple questions, huh?
God damn it. I say for the better, and here's why. The thing about social media is that reportage happens constantly. Mm. Let us talk about the most recent police shooting. The news was reporting the story that the officer gave, and then the video came out showing the man being shot in cold blood in the back, and now no white person can say, well, there's two sides to every story. Well, we don't have all the facts. And then I challenged people. I said, now go back to every single fucking time you heard about a black person struggling with the police and then getting shot. Let's say that only 10% of those were falsified. What country are you living in now? Where do you think we're coming from? Call-out culture is now a place where you can reinforce with hard facts and proof. I don't have to now prove to anybody that I am enduring microaggressions. I have white people writing to me going, how do you do this? How do you do it? I'm like, I don't fucking know. I don't know. I'm nuts. You know how I do it? Racism, racism, racism. Kittens and puppies. Look at this vine of a chick being licked by a dog. Racism, 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 pillaging and death and destruction. And now here is
an otter.
It's a really good goat one. It's like,
here's a goat licking an electric fence.
Yeah. Well, and I also think maybe what you're talking about is a little broader than like this kind of zeroing in that people are doing about call out culture, which I think, I don't know, can people hear the quotes in my voice? I can hear them. I sound sarcastic. This idea that we engage in a very specific sort of way of telling people when they did something wrong that is a lot of in words and a lot of things that are not accessible to people outside of academia, and a lot of things that are not accessible if you're above a certain age or you're below a certain class or et cetera, et cetera. And then where I've seen that in a toxic way, in where I do find myself nodding along with some of those pieces, is I've definitely witnessed people without that sort of access who live in those communities and are experiencing those lived experiences get shut the fuck down, which I think is... couldn't be wrong, right? So that is a point where I see, like, okay, this could be a really, also a very damaging thing. And I also think that we want a semantics that call people out, call people in, whatever, but I just think, like, what's your motivation? If your motivation is to be right on the internet, you should probably look at kittens. If your motivation is to engage in a dialogue with someone you actually share a community with in hopes of making something infinitesimally better, either for you or for the next person, then that's legit. Like, that's worth everyone being uncomfortable and awkward for. That's worth us, you know, sitting in this for. But I think that the part where people just kind of jump in on people they don't know, and there's a lot of like, oh, well, you said the word that we changed it to last week, and you don't know, you clearly aren't whatever enough. I hear it a lot in trans community, you know, well, if you don't know, you didn't drop the ED off transgender, well, then you are a...
What is this asterisk? Are you still using the asterisk?
Oh, you use the asterisk. Oh, wouldn't you, sweetie? Right? Like, I feel like people have said this shit to me, and I'm just like, look, A, I'm older than a lot of you, and I thought the star was cute. Are we not doing the star anymore? Yeah,
Brooklyn, you're the youngest person here. What do you think old people don't know? Old white people.
I don't know. I would say that it's still happening. Maybe just in different language. Yeah, I don't hang around too many white people.
Surely you've seen white people on the internet. You know, I will say, and you can tell me if I'm talking out of my ass, I feel like younger folks move far more quickly and recover more quickly from these type of conflagrations. You know, I feel like the younger folks I knew who jumped in and they were like, rah, 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 and this is racist, this is terrible, and then had the discussion, and then were like, okay, now what do we do? What do we do? We want a solution, we want to do something.
Yeah, that's its own trap too. I mean, similar to the question about what can people do to be allies, my experience is that young white people are really excited about doing something as opposed to, again, a process, shifting the way that they think about where they're positioned and how they interact with people of color because of that. And so I think as part of the desire for action, that is a huge step process that gets skipped over. But I think you are right that, yeah, but there is... more willingness to say, oh, I just stepped in the mud. Okay, I'm going to do something. I'm going to do something about it.
Okay, let's do something and take another break, and we will be back shortly.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
We are back on Sex Out Loud talking to Angel, Melina, and Brooklyn. I've tried to engage a lot of people here at International Ms. Leather about what happened and what got us here and how people are feeling. And some people are like completely over it. Some people have, of course, boycotted. They're not here. Mm-hmm. And then some people seem energized and thrilled that the shit hit the fan. Where do you fall on that spectrum?
Oh, God, the shit's always in the fan, man.
Yeah.
I just don't like this. The people who are like, this is a new thing to get all up in arms about, I'm like, where the fuck have you been? And what have you been paying attention to? Because someone today was like, well, how long have you been having these conversations? I said, for the 20 years I've been in another community. Like, all day, every day. So the people who are like, yay, I found a thing to get really excited about, I'm like, that's good, I guess. And that could be your personal moment of change. But systemically, these are not new conversations, but I'm probably some mixture of those things in that I have definitely been galvanized by this particular round to make personal changes as to where I put my energy, because I feel like a lot of times people of color end up working so fucking hard on these things, and A, it goes nowhere, which is very disheartening to put a bunch of work into, but B, no one even acknowledges it. So that was definitely the case with this. There was a lot of work done, and a lot of work was glossed over by by the producers, by people who were not the producers, like bunches of people were just like, oh, anytime a white person would say something, there'd be a fucking parade, and every time they were reiterating some shit that someone else had just said 5 seconds ago, and that part is tiring, and also makes me think to myself, like, where am I putting my energy and how is that paying off? And so I think it was galvanizing in this sort of like, get it or don't get it. I hope you do. I really do. These are people I've been not just in community with, but friends with for a really long time. I hope they get it. But I am not going to continue to give them free labor and a shit ton of goodwill until they do.
Yeah, For me, I think that this galvanized me in a way that sort of pushed me to understand that I have more power than I thought and less power than I thought. And I put up a post on my page on Facebook and said, I have a problem with the t-shirt design. I think it's insensitive. And I also think you've made it an unwearable item for an IMSO. I said, I couldn't go on television in Sweden in that t-shirt. I couldn't walk into Yale and get up on stage in front of faculty and students at Yale University with a dick gun t-shirt. I couldn't do it. And so you've made this thing that's supposed to be an outreach tool. Haha, tool. See what I did there? Thank you. I'll be here all weekend. And you've made it like you've rendered it useless, right? And I was then told that I was spearheading the anti-IMSL campaign. And I'm like, what?
There's
other spearheads. First of all, and I think you calling it a spearhead is probably racist, so. So I didn't realize that my voice was one that people were turning to for level setting. And people were saying, if Mo's upset, this must be fucked up. Because I'm seen as one of the more reasonable Negroes among the crowd of rational.
I'm going to make you.
I want a t-shirt. Word. Can I get it? What if we have a reasonable Negro?
Oh, it's I am designing it now.
You know, and so I hadn't thought of myself in terms of someone who was actually influencing people's opinion. And that was something that I said, oh, I guess that is happening. And this is the thing I understood, is that if that's true for me, it's true for other folks. Maybe I have a higher degree of visibility, but every brown face, every non-white face, every time someone walks into an event and can look and see someone who looks like them, that is an impactful statement. And when that other person is a title holder, when that other person is a presenter, when that other person is someone who's a leader, when that other person is someone who's on the planning committee for the event, that feels very different. And I said, we have a power just in our presence that I don't think we fully exploit. And the fact that so many people did decide that they weren't going to go, that was hugely impactful. And ultimately, you're going to have to appeal to the wallet and the bottom line, because whether or not we feel very close to this as an event, as something that's part of our hearts, it's still a business. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, you know, you can say you see no color, but you're still going to be having a problem if the color you're not seeing is green. Right? If you are losing money on this event because your policy is shit, and that motivates you to change, I'm actually okay with that right now.
Yeah.
Your first step towards getting your shit together is because you're going to lose money if you don't, I would hope you'd be better than that, but I'll take it.
Yeah.
I'll take it. Because at least now you are moving in that direction. And if your reason for having a more diverse teaching staff is because then you feel like you will maybe get more non-white people in the door and you will be seen as being more politically active, great, do it. Because this is a first step towards genuinely doing it for reasons and rationale that are sincere.
And I don't honestly care what your reason is. Do it for any reason whatsoever. Do it because you think they're going to give out an award for best ally. Do it because you think your friends will think you're cool. Because you're going to get money. Do it because you're going to get cookies. I don't care why you do it. If you actually make meaningful change that then impacts people of color, that's a win.
Word. I'm not going to disagree with that. Like I said, it seems like it's almost... Is that cynical? Are we super cynical?
Are you on board with that, Brooklyn?
Yeah, do it for whatever. But
it's like the discussion that we had before about intention mm-hmm. and how everyone likes to hide behind the, well, they had a good intention. Well, my intention wasn't to harm you. And my intention was not to be racist. You know, your intention might not have been to run over that cat with your car, but the cat is still dead. And so, therefore, your intentions to not kill them are irrelevant. You might not intend to be racially undiverse, but when I look at your teaching roster and I see the same non-white faces over and over again, and I say, "Hey, where's the, we didn't mean to exclude black people or brown people or red and yellow, black and white and the whole thing. We just don't know where they are. Like, why don't you tell us who they are?
Nobody
why don't
applied.
You right? No one applied. And I'm like, oh, and you didn't. You can't do the work yourself. You can't like step
and
up.
People were asked to do outreach around this. They basically bounced it back to the people doing this work who were people of color. They basically were like, well, you outreach, it's your people. And I was like, I don't know that you know what this word means that we're all using of outreach, but it's your event. You're like, you have to make a meaningful crack at it. And I get that you might not know all the same people that I might know, but if you're not trying, why should I try?
Like, well, and you get that, you get that thing all the time where you get white people who will say, well, we want more. How do we get your folks here? Like, what do we have to do? I'm like, it's weird how if you talk to people of color, we'll answer you. Mm. So the fact that this has eluded you for all these years, let's connect the dots. Where maybe are you going wrong? You're not talking to any actual people of color.
It's about discomfort. It's about fear, right? What are they going to say? And I have to go to those places and,
talk to you people.
I mean, as someone who's done an event, a white person who sat on a, with three other white co-founders who wanted to make a diverse event, I can tell you that it's like an ongoing process and it's not passive at fucking all. Like, you literally have to think about it every time you do anything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Including, language that you use, images that you use, who gets the newsletter, who gets the poster, who's in power.
And, not to blow smoke up your ass, but
you did
that.
Oh, my God, I was
going to
blow smoke up her ass.
I'm first. Step aside. I got the cheeks spread. The thing is that you did that remarkably well in a way that helped those of us who were there to not only feel safe, but I will tell you, I walked into that event, and I stood in the middle of the downstairs lobby with 12 black people, and we were like, when has this happened? When have you ever seen this many? And then like another black person go by, we're like, like high-fiving, we're just like having a great time, we're like, how did that happen? And we're looking, we're going, this is what happens when white people give a shit.
Yeah.
And it wasn't an accident. You did the work. And when people say, well, why should I bother or what should I happen, I'm like, diverse is better. Having more voices in the room is better. Having more people with different experiences is better. Your life is richer, your experience is broader, your capacity to deal with that discomfort is better. If you say some fucked up shit to my face and I'm like, bro, that was fucked up. And you can feel that moment of discomfort, but then we can have a conversation and at the end walk away going, that was uncomfortable, but I dealt with it. How much better is that than sitting behind your keyboard at home wondering if you've offended someone, choosing your words or not choosing them well, interacting with people in the community level, being next to someone, playing with someone who doesn't look like you, who's differently bodied than you, who's differently abled than you, who's culturally different than you, is huge. You know, I had to jump up in the middle of a rope class at some event because someone was talking about how to check for circulation problems. I'm like, that's not going to work on a black person. Mm-hmm. You can't be looking for, like, it was something about the, like, nail bed thing or looking at the lips. I'm like, look at my lips. You can't use that metric. You can't tell me that you're going to look for reddening of the ass because,
you'll be here a mighty long time.
I know. My shit's like splitting open and you're like, whoa, I didn't see her ass reddening. And because there was a brown person in the room, I was able to raise my hand.
Can I just say one more thing? Which is that I feel like what people want out of this is they want to
They want to be better, and they don't want to get better.
Unpack that.
Like, everybody just wants to get to the spot where they got it, and they don't want to do any of the work. And so when they don't have it, they just don't do the work, and then they're like, but I want to be better at this. Not that much. Because if you wanted to be better at a skill, we've all walked into the room not knowing what the fuck we were doing with some toy or something. Mm-hmm. Like, there's zero shame in that, to be like, what's this do? How do I hit with this thing? You know, there's like that part of like, oh, I will get better at single tailing if I fucking practice on a teddy bear if you're old school. The part where you have to be uncomfortable with another person,
yeah,
which is not always required in other things. You can go and you can practice in your own little Master Bob area and crack your whip at the air, but you can't do this without other people who you are going to piss off and offend and hurt, and you like, there's no way to do this in a vacuum. So the part where I see people all the time be like, but I want to do better, and I don't see them getting better doing that work. So I want, like, do that actual uncomfortable, kind of boring sometimes slog of just practicing that stuff.
And speak up. This is one of the good things about social media, is it actually is a good place for you to flex those muscles, mm-hmm, and work it out. And there have been times on Facebook where someone has said something that has been busted, and I've stepped in and I've said, excuse me, are you fucking kidding me? And then they will apologize and say, I am sorry that I said this thing and it came across as really insensitive, and I'm going to shut the fuck up and listen. And I will have people, I have trained so many of my people who they'll be like, I have a stupid white person question. Are you okay with that? And I'm like, some days I'm like, yes. And sometimes I'm like, nope. And then they will say, thank you. And they will leave me the fuck alone. And if I do say, okay, fine, I'll feel that today, they hear it. And that is a great place, because if I say to them, fuck you, are you fucking stupid? What the hell are you thinking? They could whimper away with a tail between their legs, but they stick around. And that's one of the things that you're saying, you can actively do. You can put yourself out there, and when you get smacked on the nose with the rolled up newspaper, you say ow, and you accept it as a part of your learning. Mm-hmm. If you're learning to throw a whip, you're going to hit yourself in the face at some point.
Repeatedly.
And you're like, ow, that sucked. But you don't say, ow, I guess I'm just never going to single tail someone's gorgeous butt because I, you know, because I hit myself in the face. You're like, ow.
Damn you, single tail. Yeah, and you hit yourself in the face 10 more times, and then you get better.
And it's so heartening, because I, at least once in the course of all of these breakdowns, I say, I am not even doing this anymore. Fuck it. No one gives a shit. No one cares. And inevitably, because this is how my life works, I will get an email from some white person who will say, I've been wanting to tell you this for years, but I didn't want you to think I was one of those white people coming back for your approval. But it seems like you've been a little down, and I want you to know you actually did make a difference. Here's what you did that changed my opinion about X. And then I'm like, oh shit, it works. Oh my God. And I think if that one person had a change of heart and 2 years later wrote to me to tell me that their thinking shifted, statistically, it's true someone else also had that experience. Just, there's no way it's in a vacuum, like the rule of 10. The lurkers who support me in email trot that old chestnut, right? But someone else probably also had that same experience. And so what I encourage people to do is to take the hit. It won't kill you to be embarrassed or uncomfortable. And if you piss off a person of color, guess what?
When?
You're doing it anyway. Sorry. When you piss off a person of color, suck it up, because you're doing it anyway. And if you publicly step forward and you say, mea culpa, I fucked up, and then you sit and listen, it's likely that that person will say, noted.
Yeah, not bad.
You know, and be like, okay, you did some shit.
Yeah.
You know, you don't expect a cookie, but maybe you can sniff the cookie.
You may have one chip.
You're not going to give me a cookie, but here's a coupon for some Milanos.
This is a rough crowd.
You knew who you were having a chip with.
Okay, so is there anything we haven't talked about that you feel like needs to be said?
This does not come from not giving a fuck. This doesn't come from the lack of investment. And I feel like a lot of times during this process, a lot of people threw at me, like, you're coming into our community and doing blah. And I'm like, A, no. But B, this would not, like, I wouldn't be continuing to do this if this wasn't my home. Mm-hmm. And I would have walked long ago. And
the people who do walk.
Oh, yeah. And that tons of people do walk. And that for the people of us who are here, I just know, A, that we're the deep perverts because our perversion drives us hard enough that we put up with this shit. Right? That we're just like, nice. I must do this.
And compulsive.
So clearly, this is happening. So I guess what else comes with us, right? But that for those people who are committed and who are keep having these conversations and doing this unpaid, unthanked work, there are people who have many more who have gotten a taste and said, fuck it. It shouldn't be that when there are 10 people in the lobby, it's like a holy shit hallelujah reunion. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't be like that. And the reason it's like that is because only the people who are really dedicated hang with it. And that sucks because plenty of those other people have a lot of shit to offer this community.
Yeah, my main thing would be to ask folks when they do see something that engages them in a defense mechanism reflexive kind of way to just take a deep breath and to say, if I'm feeling defensive and I'm feeling upset, how much more exponentially difficult may it have been for that person to overcome their own hesitation and their own fear to say something? Because to me, I tell you, one of the things that has been the most devastating about all these discussions is how many people I cared for so deeply who disappointed me so profoundly. People who are pillars of the community who refuse to speak. People I reached out to and said, will you please say something? Will you please say blackface is bad? Will you please listen and hear that I'm saying this gives me pain and discomfort? And to have them silent, not return emails or tell me that I'm being too sensitive, it genuinely is painful. And to have people I loved turn around and essentially deny my humanity in a community of people who are supposed to be dealing with the edges of humanity is striking. And what happens is you get folks who leave, or you get folks who thankfully say, we're going to create our own community. And you get people of color events. And thank God that there's critical mass that can happen. And that those spaces feel better and safer for a substantial portion of people of color. And that's awesome. But wouldn't it be great if they also felt comfortable in these more blended spaces? And wouldn't it be great if I didn't have to fear being a black woman in the leather community? It's fearsome sometimes. It's scary. And I don't like feeling scared because I prefer to think of myself as a brave warrior. And then when I'm like, I'm not a brave warrior, I'm a chicken shit, and I'm over here going, if I post this, people won't like me. If I post this, people are going to say I'm an angry black lady. And frankly, I don't know how you're not angry if you're black in this country. And I pray for people to feel okay with not feeling okay. And to say, oh my God, yes, I feel discomfort. And isn't that lovely that I have the luxury of discomfort? That's a luxurious thing if you're like, oh, I'm uncomfortable. Ah, suck it up. Because that's kind of a juicy moment for you. Because the rest of us are feeling genuine fear and are genuinely losing real relationships and are genuinely being stripped of our humanity and are having our rights violated. Please just feel. Feel without lashing back.
The mic that we're not using.
Brooklyn, the Brella mic.
Super high tech, and Brooklyn did just drop the mic. I think on behalf of Molina,
I know,
but you didn't see it.
I don't even have to drop my own mic. I'm like, Brooklyn. it'd be like James Brown, except like you just come out with like a mic and drop it.
happy with that joke.
Okay, so that's going to be your last word. The job of dropping. Okay.
So good with that.
Thanks a lot for taking the time. You two on the internet were willing to have the conversations and not just say, fuck it. I just want to thank you for keeping showing up, even when you don't feel appreciated for the work or you feel it won't work if there aren't people who are really dedicated to trying to address this and to try to, like, hold our clammy white hands as we try to fucking figure it out.
Clammy.
Never mind that play. Now who's a tough crowd? Well, and it's not just about your white clammy hands. You know, as a young person of color, like, I don't know that I would be here if I hadn't seen you as Imzel, if I hadn't been scooped up by you, you know, very soon into my coming out into this community. That has made all the difference.
Because I've seen too many people like Brecklin chase the fuck out, and so the second I saw Brecklin, I was like, excuse me, you're going to need to come this way. One of the reasons why I feel like I put my fucking big boots on and wade back in again and again is because I'm like, if I can't do this with the amount of privilege I walk in the world with, if you can keep doing it, I feel like we do really inspire each other in that way, which is great. Yeah. Which is, anytime one of us is like, no, can't do it anymore. You know, when Mo was like, fuck it, I'm not coming. And we were just like, how much money do we have to raise? Let's do this thing, right? And it's just like that, the kind of like rallying that has to happen in order for people to not totally burn out. It does keep bouncing back and forth, but that is a real constant in my life as an activist, which is I know that the amount of passing privilege that I have gives me unearned energy. and so when I feel like I'm just blowing it all in this one place and gain a little bit of it, I just keep coming back to that, to this.
Well, the bottom line is that we give a shit, and the bottom line is that there is so much love for the people who are present and who stick it out. I keep getting inspired by the active verbing allies and by the people who are present and by the people who do care and by the people who step in it and go, oh, I stepped in it really deep. My bad. Moving on. Mm-hmm. Those people keep me back because I'm like, wow, people can change. It's not hopeless.
I hope that that conversation gave you some food for thought. And I like that Melina ended it on a note of hope. I want to thank all my guests for being a part of it. Angel is a trans, gender-defiant queer. Find Angel on Facebook and Twitter at AngelAdeyoHa. Brecklin is an East Coast-raised stone butch dyke and boy. Find him on FetLife at theory_now_practice, all one word. Melina Williams is an award-winning actress, writer, BDSM educator, and storyteller. Find her at melina.com. All of these links and more can be found at sexoutloudradio.com. Just click on the link for episode resources. You can always find me at puckerup.com and on Twitter at Tristan Terramino. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible. Executive producer Karen Dana, associate producer Raymond Johnson, segment producer and editor Colton, announcer Cooper Beckett, Matt, my engineer, and everyone at Voice America. Tune in next Friday, 5 p.m. Pacific time, 8 p.m. Eastern for another edition of the show. In the meantime, we're on Facebook, on Twitter, at Sex Out Loud Radio. And remember, no matter how difficult the conversations, take some time to talk about sex out loud.
That's a wrap on today's show. Go to voiceamerica.com to listen to this and other episodes on demand or as podcasts. And make sure you come back next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific for Sex Out Loud with Tristan Terramino on Voice America Variety.